I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection. A change in the political wind today. Democratic candidate Howard Dean says he had no idea when he made plans to visit Harlem this morning that he'd be campaigning with former Vice President Al Gore at his side.
It is an extraordinary honor for me to be standing on the stage with someone who I have admired greatly, who has taught me a great deal during this campaign. It is an honor and a privilege to present to you former Vice President of the United States, Al Gore.
Al Gore says it was Howard Dean's judgment. His judgment to oppose war in Iraq that helped Gore decide who to endorse in the campaign to run against President Bush.
What I'm about to say doesn't come as a secret or as a surprise to anybody within the sound of my voice. And that is that Howard Dean really is the only candidate who has been able to inspire at the grassroots level all over this country the kind of passion and enthusiasm for democracy and change and transformation of America that we need in this country. We need to remake the Democratic Party. We need to remake America. We need to take it back on behalf of the people of this country. So I'm very proud and honored to endorse Howard Dean to be the next president of the United States of America.
All right, then. How is the race for the Democratic candidacy, the nomination, changed with today's endorsement? Is Dean now the establishment choice? Has he succeeded in crossing over from insurgent to insider? Is there any room left for Clark and Kerry, Gephardt and Lieberman? Our number's 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. And with us today, Walter Shapiro. He is one reporter who started covering the Dean campaign over a year and a half ago. It figures in part of his new book, One Car Caravan. Walter's joining us from Washington. He's there with Ryan Lizza. Ryan's an associate editor at The New Republic. He, too, has been covering the presidential campaign. It's good to have the two of you with us. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
We want to start, actually, by spending just a few minutes, though, with Doug Hadaway. And Doug's joining us on the phone. Doug was national spokesman for Al Gore in his 2000 campaign for president. And Doug's remained close to the former vice president. Doug, why Howard Dean? Why now?
I think primarily Gore, first of all, said what some folks in the Dean campaign told me was what Gore had given the speech against Iraq in 2002, and Dean was the candidate who really embraced it and ran with it, and that was important to Gore. But I think at the bottom line, I think Gore wouldn't be doing this if he didn't think Dean was the best candidate to beat Bush. If there's anybody out there who wants Bush to lose this election, it's Al Gore. And he said it, we heard in the clip you ran there, he feels clearly that Dean is the one who has ignited a grassroots movement, a lot of grassroots involvement, and this election is going to be close. It's going to be as close as 2000, a lot of people think. It's going to be critical to our nominee to be able to motivate Democratic base voters to turn out and vote, and people like Dean is igniting to get involved in the process. I think those were the main calculations for him. And the bottom line is he wouldn't be doing this if he didn't think Dean was clearly a viable candidate against Bush.
Okay, December 9th, 2003. We're, what, 6 weeks away from the very first chance for the voters to have anything to say about it. Why did Gore choose this time?
I think it's as good a time as any. Kind of, if you're going to come before all the dump caucuses and primaries start taking place, it's actually a pretty good time. 6 weeks before Iowa and New Hampshire gives time for people to talk about this, for this to sink in. I think it helps when you have such a broad field of candidates. Most people would say, you know, political endorsements aren't worth a whole lot. I tend to agree with that. But when a field's so crowded like this, where people are trying to decide which way to go, and the main question for a lot of people about Dean is whether he can get elected and beat Bush, I think this is more useful than political endorsements typically are. This gives people some time to chew on that and say, well, you know, if Al Gore thinks he's the best candidate and can beat Bush, maybe I'll give him another look. I think that's what they're hoping for.
And Walter and Ryan, do you think that the timing had more to do with Al Gore's interests or with Howard Dean's interests?
Well, there's a thing about Al Gore.
who likes the month of December to make dramatic announcements. It was 51 weeks ago to the day when Al Gore went on 60 Minutes to announce, contrary to expectation, he would not himself be a candidate for to run for 2004. So in that sense, I think Gore does follow his own internal clock, which has more to do, I think, when he comes to a decision than does about what is the maximal moment for drama. Though as for drama, this one wasn't bad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right. You know, we're also hitting an interesting political anniversary in the next few days, which is when the Florida recount ended in 2000. And I think there'll be a little bit of coverage of that in the political press.
Be careful now. I don't want Doug running screaming from the phone.
That's right. I remember Doug down there. And I think this is going to play into coverage of that anniversary. It's a sort of useful time to remind people about that. And as Doug said, we're 6 weeks away from the primary and the caucuses, and this is when normal voters are just starting to tune in to the campaign. And if you're gonna get your most bang for your buck out of an endorsement, this is a brilliant time to do it.
Doug, what do you make of the sort of early reporting we've heard about the fact that Al Gore didn't even bother to telephone Joe Lieberman to tell him he was making this endorsement, that there was no communication from the former vice president to any of the other candidates who might have been looking for a bit of a nudge? Does he not stand to make a few more enemies than friends with that?
Perhaps. I think no matter what you hear, any of the other candidates would have liked this endorsement. I was a little surprised to hear he hadn't called him. But I don't think it's anything personal. I think, as I said, he was really calculating who would be the strongest candidate given the election we're in now. He certainly has that prerogative. He picked Lieberman to be his running mate, his vice presidential candidate in a different election. This is a whole new cycle, a whole new set of circumstances. And then, frankly, I don't think Lieberman would have gotten much out of a Gore endorsement. It really wouldn't have been very newsworthy. Nobody would have been surprised by it.
You know, can I just follow up on that?
Yeah, go ahead.
I think it's an interesting slight on Gore's. Gore has a history of sort of sometimes being not following, you know, personal political etiquette to the nth degree, and I think it's interesting that Lieberman's campaign, in some ways, he started the campaign as almost a repudiation of how he and Gore ran in 2000, really talking about repudiating the sort of populist message of the Gore campaign. And I wonder if there isn't a little personal friction between the two of them from that experience.
Well, I think there's also the whole thing of, as I explained in my book, One Car Caravan, that Gore was meticulous about informing Lieberman by a BlackBerry message on the Sunday in December a year ago when Gore wasn't going to run. So in that sense, the notion that the two guys with BlackBerries strapped to their hip, one of them couldn't dash off a little message strikes me as sort of a little more rudeness than normal politics would lead to. And the second element here is the fact that I think whoever Gore endorsed would have gotten a significant amount of attention, because we in the press are really, before the voters weigh in, we are perhaps overly emphasizing three tangible factors: polls, money, and endorsements. So had Al Gore endorsed Dennis Kucinich, trust me, it would have been made CNN this morning.
Doug Hathaway, quick last one to you. Does this change Dean's status as a candidate? Does it make him more of an insider?
I think I don't know if it makes him more of an insider, but I think it makes more insiders take a more serious look at him. And not just insiders, people who are really looking for the candidate who can win the election. I think if there's one thing uniting Democrats right now, it's the desire to beat George Bush. Dean, while an outsider candidate, has really galvanized support. You cannot argue with the results that you're seeing from that campaign. And I really think that's what attracted Gore to it. And I think it is going to make people pause and think again whether Dean is a viable candidate. And Gore's really got some credentials on that front.
Doug, good to have you on the program with us.
Thank you very much. much.
Doug Hathaway was national spokesman for Al Gore in his 2000 campaign for president. This hour on the program, we're taking a look at the announcement made just a couple of hours ago by the former vice president that he is endorsing Howard Dean as his choice for the Democratic nomination. With us on the program, we have Ryan Lizza. He is associate editor of The New Republic, covering the presidential race. Walter Shapiro, veteran political columnist for USA Today, author of a brand new book called One Car Caravan. And Walter, it caught my attention that the very beginning of the book, you choose to tell us about your early encounter with Howard Dean back, I think, in September 2002, when nobody was paying attention to the guy.
Well, as I recall, I think Ryan had a piece in the New Republic that may have beaten me on this topic. But much more importantly, it was really early. And this was Howard Dean in the back of a car with one lone aide, Kate O'Connor, his Vermont State driver. And to give you an idea of how early it was, they were going over the text of the first brochure of the entire campaign. And there is Howard Dean looking at a picture of himself and frowning, saying, "Don't like this one. It makes me look like I have Bell's palsy, like I'm Dick Cheney." And then, which is so breathtaking for a candidate who's now set Democratic primary records for fundraising, he turned nervously towards Kate O'Connor and said, "Did you get a price on this?" As if somehow, had she paid $500 too much for the brochure, the entire campaign would have come to a halt.
Now, there's a quote here, Ryan, in the Warren's Walter's book. It says, has Dean saying, "You know, it quickly came to me I had a choice in quitting the governorship, of joining boards and swearing at the New York Times every morning and saying how outrageous it was. Basically, I was in a position where I thought I could run for president, so I decided I was going to." Did you pick up the same sort of whimsy from the guy back then?
In those early days, definitely. And, you know, who would have thought, if you're reading the first pages of Walter's book where he describes that great scene in the car in those early days, who would have thought that, you know, a year later, this is the guy that travels in his own plane, and then the press has its own plane. They travel with two planes now. George Bush didn't even do that in 2000. And he drives through Iowa with a satellite phone because the cell phone reception isn't great in the state. But to answer your question specifically, there was that bit of whimsy, that bit of, why not do this with Howard Dean from the beginning. I think he saw early on that this was not going to be a very strong field if Gore didn't get in the race. This was totally up for grabs. He probably remembers the lesson of 92 when a lot of the big-name candidates didn't get in the race, and it made it a lot easier for Clinton to win. And one thing Howard Dean has done from the beginning in this campaign that none of the other candidates have is take gambles, gamble after gamble, and most of them have paid off.
I mean, what's also really interesting, I was just thinking about it, in my initial interview with Dean in my book, he was talking about how he intended to be in the race until the Democratic convention. Because no matter who's the nominee, there's always buyer's remorse.
Not thinking about himself necessarily.
Now he is going to be not the beneficiary, but the potential victim of buyer's remorse.
That's right. 1-800-423-8255. Connection listeners, let's hear your thoughts on what has happened to the status of Howard Dean with the endorsement of former Vice President Al Gore, but also news that his fundraising continues apace and polls that show him ahead of most other contenders in the race for the Democratic nomination. Our number's 1-800-423-TALK. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection from NPR. I'm Dick Gordon. You're listening to The Connection from National Public Radio. Our number is 1-800-423-8255. Use that number to join our conversation about the changing nature of the Dean campaign. The Connection, of course, will always tell you about the news even before it happens. So what we can tell you is that Dean and Gore are on their way to Cedar Rapids, Iowa, where they are going to make an even bigger, splashier announcement of what they've already told us that about the announcement from Harlem, New York, earlier today. And then later this afternoon, back on the plane, back to Vermont, back to New Hampshire, back for a a rally and a debate there. We're going to bring Lisa Wangsness into the program now. She's a political reporter for the Concord Monitor and is watching the story unfold in New Hampshire. Lisa, what kind of difference will it make that Al Gore stands up and endorses Howard Dean? What kind of difference will it make in New Hampshire?
I'm not so sure. Right now, Howard Dean has a commanding lead in New Hampshire. He has been expanding a double-digit lead since September here. So I think that of all of the states that that Dean has to worry about right now, New Hampshire is not probably at the top of his list, although we should also say that New Hampshire voters are do not like it at all when people take their votes for granted, so mm-hmm. he has to watch out for that.
Well, I wonder whether or not that was going to be a factor, because Dean's campaign has become so rapidly, so recently, so national. I'm right. wondering whether or not people in New Hampshire are going to, oh, yeah, Howard, we're going to spank you for that one.
It's hard to know. I mean, I thought one of the interesting things that happened over the summer was while a lot of people here joined the Dean campaign during the spring, I think the biggest surge in support for him here came in the summer after he made the covers of Time and Newsweek and U.S. News and World Report the same week. So I think that one of the interesting – and also his second quarter fundraising, I think encouraged a lot of people in New Hampshire to sign up with his campaign because they suddenly saw him as viable and not just sort of the interesting neighbor any longer. And so I think one of the interesting phenomenons in this year's primary is the extent to which the national race has influenced voters in New Hampshire.
So in a nutshell, do you think the endorsement is going to matter at all? I mean, New Hampshire voters have seen this year after year after year. Is it going to make a big difference, do you think?
It could make some difference. I think that there are some people, there's still quite a large number of people who are undecided in the race. I think most polls show that between 20% and 30% of voters here have not made up their minds yet. So to the extent to which people here have been, voters are, we're thinking about endorsing Howard Dean or voting for Howard Dean, but holding back a little bit because of concerns about his electability. Some might see Al Gore as, sort of an adult in the Democratic Party, I guess, for lack of a better word, and be encouraged to support Dean because of that. Now, on the other hand, Al Gore did not win the New Hampshire election in the general election in 2000 here, and he just barely eked out a victory over Bill Bradley in the 2000 race, the 2000 primary race here. So, it's hard to say exactly how powerful Al Gore's name is going to be.
Well, we'll be watching along with you. Lisa, thanks for being with us on the program.
Thanks very much.
Lisa Wangsness is a reporter from Concord, New Hampshire, the Concord Monitor. Back to Walter Shapiro and Ryan Lissa, joining us both from a studio in Washington. Let's just take a look not only at today's endorsement by Gore, but at Dean's announcement of a national advertising campaign literally months before you would expect that sort of announcement from a Democratic candidate. Kerry saying, oh, well, a number two finish would be fine for me. And also talk that that Dean has raised this phenomenal amount of money. I mean, it goes without saying that he's now the front runner. But can we go so far as to say that he's got a lock on the nomination? What do you two think?
I think it's always too early to say that because there are those people out there called voters that unfortunately get to decide this thing before we do. Like Walter was saying before, by all of the criteria that previous elections have been judged by, as far as predicting who the winner is going to be, Dean is in the lead, whether it's money or polls or momentum or sort of tangible on the ground support. And like you said, no one is pursuing a national campaign in the way that Dean is right now. I mean, the other poor candidates are stuck trying to gain traction in Iowa and New Hampshire, while Dean is suddenly leapfrogged onto the rest of the states that will vote in February and March, and that's obviously gives him a huge advantage.
I think one of the interesting things is that by Gore putting this, his endorsement, so much pivoted on Dean's full-throated opposition to the war in Iraq, it does lay open a potential for the alternative to beat Dean being a candidate who supported the war full-throatedly. And there are right now only two candidates who really fit that bill. Joe Lieberman, oddly enough, who has been an enthusiastic hawk all the way through, and Dick Gephardt, who at least is a hawk in terms of consistency of voting record, being, along with Lieberman, the only Democrats to both vote for the October 2002 resolution and also vote for the $87 billion for Iraq.
What you're saying by extension, Walter, is that Kerry and Clark are going to get caught either way by trying to have it both ways.
Exactly. To a large extent, Kerry and Clark do have the problem of they are sort of against the war, but not against the war in the way Dean is. And once again, they are facing an eroding rationale for their candidacies.
Let's go to our first caller. Al's joining us now on the line from the Research Triangle Park of North Carolina. Hi, Al. Thanks for calling.
Thank you. Greetings from Hillsboro, North Carolina, actually.
All right.
Great. So y'all have wandered a little bit afield, and that's fine. But I'd like to take it back to something that Mr. Gore said in his remarks this morning. It was a phrase that went, someone who can take the Democratic Party back. And the question I'd like you to address, if you would, and I have my ideas about this already, but take it back from whom? And it certainly isn't George Bush, because while he has the Republican Party, he doesn't have the Democrat Party. So who exactly is Howard Dean meant to be taking?
Ryan, I think this one goes to what I've been reading about your writing, maybe.
Well, I think that was one of the most fascinating lines in Gore's speech this morning. He said, we need to, he wasn't just talking about the fight against Bush, but he specifically said, we need to remake the Democratic Party. And a lot of the coverage of this so far has been that this is an endorsement from the establishment of the Democratic Party. But that establishment split, and I would argue it's split between the Clintonites and I would say the party itself is split between the Clintonites and the Dean folks, and Al Gore has just thrown his support on the side of the Dean people.
Well, since during the 2000 campaign, Gore hasn't sat very comfortably in the pew with the Clintonites, has he?
Not at all. And if you look at everything as Gore has done since he bowed out of this race in 2002. He's slowly and slowly become started to sound and appear more and more like Howard Dean. I mean, his big speeches since he bowed out of the race have been attacks on the war mm-hmm. and an attack on the Patriot Act. He's really become intrigued and sort of captivated by the sort of internet grassroots groups like MoveOn.org. Reading one of the some of the coverage, Gore got 3,000 people to go to. By advertising with MoveOn.org to go to one of his speeches. Now, if you cover the 2000 campaign, you remember that he couldn't get 3,000 people to show up for anything out there on the stump.
When he was a candidate for president. Yeah,
as a candidate for president.
Let's just refer back to Al in Hillsborough here. Yeah. Al, are you seeing this as Gore and Dean basically saying, enough with the Clintons, the Democratic Party is not yours?
Clearly, that's what I'm seeing. If I were a Democrat strategist, which I'm not, I'm actually more of a Republican strategist. But if I were to look at what's going on right now and the money that Dean's planning on spending in Iowa, he's planning on getting out there and getting ahead of the pack, because I think what the other half of the party is, the Democrat Party is talking about, as the gentleman said, is there needs to be a clear front runner coming out of Iowa. Because I think the Gore-Dean side of the party is trembling that Hillary Clinton may make a run in 2004.
But give me your Republican perspective then, Al. If you're looking at a split there and Dean and Gore perhaps trying to make a push there, is that good news for George Bush? Is that bad news?
Asking me to work against my candidate, but clearly, in all honesty, separation from I think the Clinton legacy has a lot better chance of pulling moderate Republicans or just the moderate middle of all across this country over to a D candidate as opposed to an R candidate.
Walter Shapiro, what are you thinking?
Well, what I'm thinking about is, first of all, it is only this fantasy world in which viewers of Fox News and readers of the New York Post reside in, and I'm not saying the caller fits either of those categories, who believe that Hillary Clinton will run in 2004. She will not run in 2004, not because she's so high-minded and soulful that she wants to only serve the people of upstate New York, but because she recognizes that a candidate with her level of opposition, even if she can win the Democratic nomination, cannot win the general election. And this may be different in 2008, which has always been the year that she is focused on. So in that sense, the Hillary short-term versus Howard Dean phenomena is non-existent. But what this does represent is a repudiation of the politics of Clintonism, including the politics that governed the Gore 2000 election. What is really interesting is that Al Gore and I assume his daughter Karenna are now with Howard Dean. All of the consultants who made this one of the worst, the 2000 race, one of the worst races in American history since Thomas Dewey, are either with Wesley Clark, John Kerry, or Joe Lieberman. And basically, I think it may be an advantage to Dean that he gets Gore, not Gore's consultants.
Yeah.
Tell me something, though, because you have both a tremendous amount of experience covering campaigns, and there are moments, this may be one of them, when a certain candidate gets such a nudge, gets such a push ahead, that reporters, that journalists traveling with him then suddenly start to tighten the screws and say, hey, we don't want the guy getting, you know, too much of a free ride. Time we started to lean down on Howard Dean. There hasn't been a lot of leaning. Do you suspect that maybe this is the time to watch some of that?
Well, you know, it seems to me that every time, if you look at the ebb and flow of this race, that every time Howard Dean seems to be backed into a corner where there seems to be a sort of break in the news and an opportunity where some candidate or some storyline is starting to damage him or reporters are starting to come down, the Dean campaign comes up with some announcement, some process story, some fundraising goal that they met, that or some major endorsement from a former vice president that just completely changes the storyline for another week. I remember this happened when Wesley Clark got in the race. Howard Dean, you know, among political reporters, he was on the ropes. And all of a sudden, Wesley Clark came in the race and all of the attention shifted to Clark. And it was like a sigh of relief almost for Dean. Recently, you know, there are a couple of stories that have been dogging Dean, like the records in Vermont that he sealed. And suddenly, his campaign at every one of these moments has this incredible ability to just completely change the momentum. And now the Gore endorsement obviously is going to overwhelm the secret records for a few days here.
We're into Christmas, and suddenly we're into January 1st, 3 weeks before Iowa and New Hampshire, and there's not even been an anointed alternative to Dean arising out of the Democratic pack. That said, no candidate, not George W. Bush in 2000, not Walter Mondale in 1984, has ever had an unmolested march to a presidential nomination. So while this may be the end of the beginning, and even the beginning of the end, it is far from over.
You're listening to The Connection from National Public Radio. Our telephone number is 1-800-423-8255. I'm Dick Gordon. Let's take our next call from Concord, Massachusetts. Mary's joining us. Hi, Mary.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
Just a couple points. I think the Democratic Party owes Howard Dean a big thank you for doing at least three things they were not able to do in the 2000 election and the 2002 election. First of all is getting the DNC and the Democratic Party behind Democratic candidates who needed reelection in the 2002 2002 election. That was disgraceful the way many Democrats lost their seats or their governorships. And just a couple of weeks ago, as you know, Howard Dean helped one of the congressmen from Iowa raise $50,000 in about 3 days through his internet campaign, which is about 30% of the congressman's entire campaign chest. So, you know, first of all, he's been able to help other Democratic candidates to raise money, which the party never did do. Second of all, he fights back. When the Republican Party or the Club for Growth now has put ads against him, within 48 hours, he's got the Club for Truth, and he's able to fight back on those.
Mary, do you think that Howard Dean is doing these things because they're good for the Democratic Party or because they're good for Howard Dean?
Well, they're good for Howard Dean, but I'm wondering why the party isn't embracing this and when they are going to embrace this. That is my question. I've seen him do, I mean, for me, the party was a tremendous disappointment in 2002. I sat back. I didn't even want to listen to the news. I didn't even want to hear the night after the election and see all those seats lost that shouldn't have been lost. And I was wondering what everybody else was. Where is our party?
Let's hear from, if we can, from Walter Shapiro and Ryan Liz. I think it's an interesting point because there still is a tremendous amount of Democratic Party muscle that's looking at Howard Dean as a man on the end of a plank, a man on a high wire, someone they don't want to attach their weight to for fear that he's going to have a big fall. What's it going to take? Or is the party ever going to say, right, that's our guy?
Well, I think to some extent it's going to be hard for a number of Democrats to say he's our guy because they are going to live in mortal terror all through the campaign. Not that Howard Dean is going to lose 57 states, but the fact that Howard Dean will not return their phone calls.
Yeah. I think that's an excellent point. I mean, this campaign...
Explain what you mean, won't return their phone calls. I'm not sure.
What I mean is whether it is Democratic fundraisers whose ability to raise $50,000 by calling 25 of their friends is, shall we say, as the caller points out, been, shall we say, overtaken by the Internet and Howard Dean, or whether it is Democratic established figures who backed other candidates, or the Democratic Leadership Council, which put out a press release back in May, likening Howard Dean to George McGovern and Walter Mondale. All of these people have something now to lose if the Democrats nominate a candidate who doesn't need them and resents things that they've said or done leading up to this point. And it would be even more acute for those people, particularly fundraisers, who really think, you know, being ambassador to Austria for 2 years would be rather a lot of fun.
And Ryan, very, very, very briefly, I mean, Dean is making it clear that he doesn't necessarily need them, does he?
I think that's absolutely true. You know, you see stories in recent weeks about how Dean is reaching out to the Washington establishment and he has some lobbyists meeting once a week. I don't see a whole lot of evidence of it. This guy is running a true outsider campaign. And his message to a lot of people in Washington, a lot of people that didn't give him a snowball's chance in hell, is, you know, screw you.
Connection listeners, 1-800-423-8255. Al Gore used to be considered the insider's insider. Now he has chosen Howard Dean as the man he's backing for the Democratic nomination. How does that change the campaign? How does it change Dean's chances and your view of what's going to happen in the race? I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection from NPR. Support former Vice President Al Gore said in Harlem, New York earlier this morning, we need to remake the Democratic Party. We need to remake America. We need to take it back on behalf of the people of this country. And his way to do that was to endorse Howard Dean as the Democratic nominee in this particular presidential race. 1-800-423-8255. We'd like to hear from you on how you see that changing the political landscape. With me on the program, Ryan Lizza, who is an associate editor of The New Republic, covering the presidential race. Walter Shapiro, who is a veteran political columnist for USA Today and author of a new book called One Car Caravan, On the Road with the 2004 Democrats Before America Tunes In. And let's take our next call from Carlisle, Massachusetts. Nancy's joining us. And Nancy, I guess with a little bit of political history from your perspective as well.
Yeah, a little bit. This is a little bit off the Gore pronouncement. I'm a veteran of the 1972 McGovern campaign when we all watched a very decent man really get marginalized and treated as some extremist, radical, wild-eyed, crazy person. And I'm wondering if any of your guests have a comment about if Howard Dean does get the nomination, if there's a viable strategy for him to avoid being McGovernized by the Republicans. They did it in 72, and I don't see why they can't do it again, which is the one thing that keeps me from really strongly supporting Dean, who seems like a decent person who probably could be a wonderful person.
Well, Nancy, I think you're right on the mark. The party is talking about McGovern in their consideration of Howard Dean. Walter Shapiro and Ryan Lizza, how about the fears there that even if he gets this great endorsement from his own party, that he'll be red meat for the Republicans?
Well, I think one of the key things that really illustrates how the Republicans are going to run their campaign against the Democrats, no matter who the nominee is an ad that they aired in Iowa and New Hampshire about last week ago, talking about the war on terrorism, including the Chyron on screen.
Oh, we seem to have lost our connection to Washington. We'll have that back in just a minute. But Nancy, while we reconnect, I know the quote that Walter was going to tell us. Some in the Democratic Party are attacking the president for attacking the terrorist. You see this coming around again. You see them taking advantage of the really strong divide over the war here.
Yeah, And what I watched in 1972 was it seemed to me that there was a really broad popular movement that something had to be done to end the war, and somehow the Republicans were able, because McGovern was such a strong peace candidate, mm-hmm. and because he was such a decent person, I think, they basically managed to turn it around and force him way over onto the left. I don't know how they did it because I'm not sophisticated politically. It was a big disappointment to me, and it made me think that probably a decent person can't ever be elected president.
Well, that's scary. Let's go back to Walter and Ryan, and they're back with us. Walter, I finished your sentence there about some. Go ahead.
But the point that was what leaped out of me was the documentation the Republican National Committee put out to justify the fact that they are running a soft on terrorism campaign against the Democrats, and there were quotes not totally taken out of context from every single serious Democrat running that the Republicans could use to argue hyperbolically, to my mind, totally unethically, that the Democrats were in essence supporting the terrorists. And that sort of implies that no matter who the Democratic nominee is, well, even if it's Joe Lieberman, Republicans will try to turn him into George McGovern. So in that sense, Howard Dean may not be any more vulnerable on this score than his cautious opponents for the nomination.
I mean, that's a good point. I mean, the question, you know, you could argue that Dean is the worst possible candidate for the Democrats to nominate, except for all the others. I mean, they all have weaknesses, and they're all going to be attacked in the same exact one as tax-raising, soft-on-terrorism wimps in the mold of Dukakis and Mondale. And, you know, what the Dean people will argue is they have some institutional advantages that none of their rivals have, which is a gigantic fundraising base. And if you're going up against $200 million, the $200 million that George Bush is going to have, you can't get your message out. You know, you'll never even get to your message unless you have the resources to face Bush. And none of the other Democratic candidates, the Dean folks argue, are going to have those resources.
I think the case that has been made on behalf of Dean is that every other Democrat would confront the Bush juggernaut pretty much like World War I, lining up on the others in your own trench on the other side of the battlefield. And that to a large extent, because the Republicans have the presidency and a fundraising advantage, they have the firepower. And that what Howard Dean represents is asymmetric warfare, in blunt terms, and that it's a different way of fighting a political campaign.
Yeah.
And it can be argued that a different way may do better or may do worse than the traditional Democratic way. But the traditional Democratic way sure didn't work in the 2002 congressional election.
Let's go back to our callers if we can here. 1-800-423-8255. Nancy, thanks for that. To Lexington, Massachusetts now. And Esther, you're with us. Go ahead.
Thanks for taking the call. Wonderful discussion, wonderful program. For me, I'm delighted that Gore endorsed Dean. I think it's forward-looking. I think taking back the party. I want these questions for the for your two guests. It seems to me if the Democrats don't stop fractionalizing, we're dead, because of everything that's just been said, the media and the money for Bush will do anything, lie, cheat, select. At any rate, my question is this. It seems to me I'd like their reaction to the possibility and the reality that if Dean had either Gephardt or Clark, I don't know if it'll be possible, on the ticket with him, would a lot be neutralized with respect to the independents looking at who they wanted to vote for, who they wanted to vote for? And I just want to make the comment that this take back our, the party, I think, is a very important and large. I think it's more than take back the party. There's a mass of us Americans out here who want a non-lobby-controlled Republican-Democrat Congress.
Okay, Esther, I'm wondering, Walter, Ryan, is it time to talk about who'd be on the ticket with Dean now? Is that premature?
I think it's probably premature. But one thing about Dean, as Walter, to give Walter another plug for his book, as he points out in his book, is Dean is a very, very shrewd politician. I mean, he has the sort of in some ways very Clinton-like in how he's a political strategist. And I think when it comes time to pick a vice president, he's going to sort of look at what are the things that he lacks as a candidate, whether it be Washington experience or national security credentials, and those are going to be extremely important in who he chooses. I think the case for someone like Wes Clark maybe it diminishes as a VP candidate for someone like Dean, just because one of the big criticisms of Dean will be D.C. experience. So he might want someone that's legislated like and been a governor like Bob Graham, the former governor and current senator from Florida.
I have very few religious beliefs that guide my coverage of politics, but this is one. I'm only on July 1 of an even-numbered year do I indulge in vice presidential speculation. And the reason is because these decisions are based on, as Ryan pointed out, deficiencies. But they're based on deficiencies that the polls pick up in the last moment before the candidate has to choose. Mm-hmm. And we have no idea if Howard Dean is the nominee. Which aspects of Dean's persona will seem both the weakest come mid-2004 mm-hmm. and also the ones that might be fixed. For example, just because Dean may have an image of being angry doesn't mean that picking a happy vice president will fix that persona. A vice president who is a clone of Dick Cheney might do it for national security credentials, or they may go regional. Or, for that matter, Dean may do what Bill Clinton did in 1992, picking a vice president by the name, I think, of Gore, by just taking, not by taking Gore, but by taking an outsider, someone who accentuates right. his outsider appeal, and that this is a new Democratic Party.
All right, yeah. You're listening to The Connection from National Public Radio. Our number is 1-800-423-8255. Let's go to Somerville, Massachusetts now. Tom, you're with us. What do you think?
Good morning. Well, I wanted to take us back just for a moment to this question of whether or not Dean will turn into another George McGovern. I actually think that the endorsement today demonstrates one in a series of very important differences between the Dean campaign and the McGovern campaign, and I hope to get your guests to comment on that. But I would say that, first of all, people who remember the McGovern campaign will recall that it was in many ways, as it was dubbed then, a children's crusade in which McGovern captured the nomination with very little support from the rest of the party and from the party establishment, and that their attitude towards the rest of the party establishment was really quite dismissive. Dean has trod a very different path, and he is... He's managed to bring a lot of people into his campaign who perhaps have been disillusioned in the past, and he's managed to activate the base. But at the same time, as we've seen with this endorsement and some of the other moves he's made, he's actually managed to maintain strong diplomatic relations with other crucial components of the Democratic Party.
I mean, the other thing, too, that we're talking about something that is 30 years later, Tom, and the fact that Dean has access not only to the Internet as a way of reaching people, but as a way of raising money probably makes the campaign different. Walter, Ryan, what do you think here?
I think there is an element that Dean's difference. Dean is still an outsider candidate. And really only two insider Washington events of magnitude have happened. The endorsement by two powerful unions, the service employees and AFSCME a few weeks ago, and now Gore's endorsement. Other than that, in terms of still keeping a fairly tight campaign structure in terms of insiders, that this is still an anti-Washington, outside of Washington campaign with now a few advanced scouts of the establishment saying this is the way we should go.
Yeah, and I would argue this is a little inside baseball, but if you look at the two big establishment events that Walter just talked about, look who they are. Andy Stern of the big union, the SEIU, his reputation in the labor movement is as a reformer. He has clashed really violently with the leadership of the AFL-CIO, has started his own organization. So he's sort of reform-minded. It lines up with what Dean's doing. Al Gore is in a very similar situation. He's not part of the sort of Clinton-Washington establishment that we talk about. And he, is, as he said today, is looking to remake the Democratic Party. So even Dean's establishment support are sort of fashioning themselves in some way as reformers and outsiders.
Walter, the early call you make in One Car Caravan is that Dean is both beguiling and exasperating as a candidate, a little bit perhaps intemperate. Does that mean that he's going to be a little bit hard to bolt down for the next few months, the possibility that he'll go off as some kind of loose cannon?
I think part of it is that I think any human being would resist the sort of soundbite repetition that a candidate has to go through when they are under full media scrutiny. That said, every speech that Howard Dean ad-libs is an adventure. Because there is always the moment where he can say something that, shall we say, will take the campaign in a new artistic direction. right now the person who is most empowered to deny Howard Dean the Democratic nomination is Howard Dean.
Yeah.
All right, we're out of time. Walter, I want to thank you for being with us on the program today.
Thank you.
Walter Shapiro is a columnist for USA Today. Ryan Lizza, thanks for your time.
Thanks so much.
Ryan is associate editor of The New Republic. Earlier on the program, we talked with Doug Hadaway, former national spokesman for the Gore campaign in 2000, and Lisa Wangsnes, political reporter for the Concord Monitor in Concord, New Hampshire. You're welcome to continue this conversation in the forum pages of our website. You can find us at www.theconnection.org. Our program is produced by Khalil Bird, Sarah Field, Kelly Jones, Arit Karitsky-Fox, Jen Mattson, Christina Russo, and Doug Sugarts. Our interns are Jennifer Giles and Sarah Ligon. Our senior producer is Tara Murphy. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection.